Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, a radio presentation of Catholic Answers, one of the largest and most trusted apologetics and evangelization organizations in North America. Catholic Answers Live features some of the top theologians and apologists in the world, discussing a wide range of theological, spiritual, and moral issues important to everyone. Call now to talk live with today's guest, toll free at 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-318-7884. And now, from San Diego, here's the host of Catholic Answers Live, Jerry Usher.
And it's good to be with you once again. I'm Al Cresta, sitting in for Jerry a few days this week. I want to remind you that tomorrow, James Aiken and Johnny Hocraft will be back with Open Line Friday. But today, I'm sitting in for Jerry. And in honor of Pope John Paul II's birthday coming up tomorrow, we've asked George Weigel to join us. George is the author of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II. It really is the definitive work. And George is a senior fellow of the Ethics and Public Policy Center. He's also a Roman Catholic theologian, one of America's leading commentators on religion and public life. He's been writing about the Pope since the first days of John Paul's pontificate and is the author-editor of 14 books. Again, the one that we're most interested in today is Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II. And George, it's good to talk to you once again.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Well,
it might be useful to mention right up front that Witness to Hope has just been published in paperback with a new chapter, actually an afterword, on the Jubilee year.
Very good.
So those who already have the hardback now have a reason to go out and get a paperback as well.
Very good. And any comment on the documentary that will be made?
Seems to have been very positively received in some of the private showings we've had. We're still shopping for a TV network to pick this up, and hopefully there'll be some news on that in the next couple of months.
When you first decided that you wanted to do a biography on Pope John Paul II, was it difficult to get access to him, or did the mountain come to Mohammed here?
No, I proposed this idea to the Pope's press spokesman, Joaquin Navarro, in May 1995. In December 1995, the Holy Father indicated that he would cooperate with this. In March 96, he and I discussed the ground rules in what was, to my mind, a very satisfactory way. So I began working on this full-time in June 1996, and it was a very intense but smooth process.
How did you go about working on it? In other words, were you given special access to the Pope or to archives? Or how did you begin a project like this?
I spent 20 hours in conversation with the Holy Father. As the acknowledgments at the back of the book make clear, I talked to hundreds of people throughout the Catholic world, and I was able to bring some documentation to the public that had previously not been available. Why did this work? I suppose because I knew a lot of the cast of characters before I started the biography.
Mm-hmm.
And we had good working relationships, and you know, I think relationships of trust. So that was certainly useful.
It's a massive work, and must have just been a tyrannical mistress for you for a few years.
I wouldn't say that I experienced it that way. I had a lot of fun doing this. I mean, it was an immense amount of work, but it was also a work that I had the sense of being well prepared for by other things I had done in the previous 20 years. It was something I very much wanted to do. And it was something about which I had a sense of vocational commitment.
Okay.
So you put all that together, and it makes for a great way to spend 3 years.
Our number here is 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-31-TRUTH. And you're going to have the opportunity to talk to George Weigel about John Paul II, whose birthday we celebrate tomorrow, isn't it, George?
That's right, May 18th.
He'll be 81?
Correct.
Our number again, 1-888-31-TRUTH. Now, John Paul II's legacy will be what? As a theologian? As a philosopher? As a leader? As an evangelist? As a great geopolitical strategist? What will it be?
I think it will be all of the above, with the possible exception of the last.
Okay.
I don't think the Pope understands himself as a geopolitical strategist. I think he understands himself as a pastor who happens to have had a great impact on contemporary world politics by reason of being an effective and compelling and courageous pastor. There is no one thing that I would lift up above a list of perhaps 9 or 10. I think he has renovated the papacy for the 21st century by returning it to its New Testament roots. The office of Peter in the New Testament, as we've been reminded during the daily Mass readings during this Easter season, was a pastoral and evangelical office. It was not a managerial office. And that is the kind of papacy that John Paul II has recreated. Certainly his courageous attempts to vindicate and implement the Second Vatican Council in its fullness loom large in his legacy. He played a pivotal role in the collapse of European communism. That is now well recognized today, and I think will be even more recognized in the future. He identified the challenges facing free societies in a post-communist world. In the encyclical Incentes Missanus and Evangelium Vitae. He has placed ecumenism at the heart of the Catholic Church. He's opened a wholly new level of dialogue with Judaism and other great world religions. His theology of the body is arguably the most compelling Christian response to the sexual revolution ever articulated. The Catechism of the Catholic Church represents his achievement in making the Catholic proposal to the world coherent and compelling on the edge of a new millennium. And then I think you have to measure his achievement in terms of hundreds of millions of individual lives who have been transformed by their encounter with his discipleship. So it's a very, very impressive package. And it's not over yet.
No, it's not over yet, even at 81 years of age. Do you know if he's working on new teaching?
I'm not aware of anything.
No, okay. But, I mean, this is remarkable, and there'll be many who will, after his passing, will want to define his legacy. How do you go about... You've just given us a whole list of things. What will be the test of his greatness in the future? How would you measure it? Now, you've given us a list of initiatives.
It can already be measured in the lives of Catholics all over the world who are living vigorous, evangelically assertive lives of faith because of his example and witness. And that that will, you know, as they form their children and their students and so forth, you know, this heritage is going to continue long into the future.
It's easy for people to try to impose upon the Pope political categories, and so you often hear this phrase that he's a theological conservative, but a social liberal.
Yeah, well, that's all nonsense.
That's why I brought it up.
The Catholic Church isn't liberal conservative. The Catholic Church is about the truth. And it serves no good end to try to parse these questions, questions of doctrine, questions of the moral life, questions of church structure, in categories that simply come from a different realm. it's like asking why can't Shaquille O'Neal hit an outside curveball. I mean, it's just the wrong question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Nobody asks whether the Dalai Lama is a liberal Buddhist or a conservative Buddhist. Why are we obsessing on these categories? Why does the media, I should say, obsess on these categories in dealing with the Church and the Pope?
Do they obsess on these categories outside the United States?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Even outside the United States?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
In part, that's
because of the impact of the American media around the world. I mean, if CNN frames a papal story in those terms, that's the way a couple of billion people see it all over the planet. But I think those categories, I mean, the attempt to understand church issues and essentially political categories is a temptation that many other cultures have succumbed to beyond our own.
Our number again is 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-31-TRUTH. We're going to be taking your calls on the other side of the break, but it's always good to have them lined up ahead of time. As we continue conversation with George Weigel, he's the author of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II. It's the biography I recommend to people regularly, now available in paperback with an afterword looking at the Jubilee year. Again, the number 1-888-31-TRUTH. The Pope is known for his ecumenical outreach. There's some news today that Pope John Paul II, during his visit to Greece, made a request for pardon for Catholic offenses against the Eastern Orthodox, and that this has given major impetus to the cause of ecumenism. Do you know anything about it, George? It's just news that I received today. So,
well, no, it was publicly stated by the Pope a week ago in Athens. So it's very much in line with his Jubilee year intention that the Church should cleanse its conscience on the edge of a new millennium in order to enter that new millennium with a full evangelical head of steam behind it. I think given the psychological condition of a lot of the Orthodox world, this was extremely effective being done on site in Athens, not simply in Rome, but in the heart of Greek Orthodoxy. And I think, yes, I mean, certainly in human terms, this has created a new platform for the ecumenical dialogue to go forward.
Has this been one of his greatest disappointments, that at age 81 he's not seen the reunion of East and West?
I think so, but he doesn't, he's not a whiner. He doesn't, or a hand-wringer. He gets on with getting on. And I think you saw the effect of that in Athens. I mean, for a month before that visit,
there's
endless speculations about what a catastrophe this was going to be. And yet he believed that this is what he ought to do. And his very presence there changed the circumstance in human terms and psychological terms in a way that, as I say, made a new beginning possible.
Our number once again is 1-888-31-TRUTH. And we're going to take your calls in just a minute. And I promise, Nancy from Philadelphia, you've been waiting. You'll be first when we come back. My guest is George Weigel. He is the author, not most recently perhaps, but this has been a definitive work on the life of Pope John Paul II. It's called Witness to Hope. It is the biography of Pope John Paul II. And what we're going to be doing is answering your questions. So again, the number is 1-888-31-TRUTH. Now, we'll take your calls on the other side of the break, but first, I want you to learn about a special Catholic Answers radio offer.
Hi, friends. Jerry Usher here. You know, it's a blessing to have Al Cresta hosting the program while I'm away, and a genuine honor to feature George Weigel as our guest today. When my plans were being made to be gone this week, I was especially disappointed that I would miss hosting this particular program. The reason is because of my deep love for Pope John Paul II, a love I'm sure many of you share. Make no mistake, we're living in truly historic times under the leadership of one of the greatest popes in the history of the Church. John Paul has had a hand in so many monumental events, it's impossible to begin to list them all, from the fall of communism to the collapse of dictatorships to the epic papal visit to Cuba. Our Holy Father has been front and center on the world stage, helping to address every major question facing mankind at the dawn of the new millennium. Well, it's almost certain that you and I will never come face to face with this great man. Now you can meet him personally through the pen of our radio guest, George Weigel, author of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II, the amazing story of John Paul's fascinating life, which the Pope himself asked George Weigel to write. Call our customer service department at 888-291-8000 to order your very own copy of Witness to Hope. George Weigel was given unprecedented access to Pope John Paul and the people who have known and worked with him throughout his entire life. And you'll come to know and love him more as you make your way through the nearly 1,000 pages of detailed information about his life and ministry, complete with dozens of photographs. And when you order Witness to Hope, we'll rush you a free copy of our Papacy Workbook, 80 pages filled with information about the history of the papacy, the Pope as shepherd, the Pope as teacher, how popes are selected, and much more, all supported with tons of references to Scripture, the Catechism, and the Church Fathers. And when it comes to discussing the life of a man like Pope John Paul II, a one-hour radio program like this can barely skim the surface, but now you can have access to everything you'd ever want to know about this saintly shepherd of Christ's flock. Order a copy of Witness to Hope for your own library and for anyone you know who would benefit from reading George Weigel's terrific biography of our Holy Father. Personally, I wish he could be our Pope forever, but we know that's not going to happen, so all the more reason to own a copy of Witness to Hope by George Weigel. This way, you can better appreciate John Paul for as long as God allows him to be with us and treasure his memory when God calls him home. Francis Cardinal George of Chicago has called Witness to Hope the definitive work when it comes to biographies of Pope John Paul. Every home should have a copy of this great book. Get yours today by calling 888-291-8000. Don't forget, we'll also send you a free copy of our 80-page Papacy Workbook. Dial 888-291-8000 now.
Call now to speak with today's guest toll-free at 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-318-7884. And now, more Catholic Answers Live.
And it's good to be back with you. I'm Al Cresta, sitting in for Jerry Usher, who's globetrotting. With me is George Weigel. He's the author of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II. And let's go to your calls right now. The number is 1-888-31-TRUTH. As soon as someone finishes the call, we'll have an open line and you can get through. That's 1-888-31-TRUTH. And as promised, Nancy from Philadelphia, it's good to have you with us.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Mr. Weigel, I really enjoyed your book. I know it was probably very daunting to write. And when I looked at the size of it, it was, you know, perhaps equally daunting to read. But I got through it relatively well. I found it to be very factual, although kind of written in between the lines. I kind of came up with some ideas that perhaps the Pope had a real mystical component to his life. And I'm not sure you addressed that directly, but I'd be interested in your perspective on it.
I think the Holy Father does have a genuine mystical intuition. I think there are dimensions of his interior life that take place in a realm, I'm not sure how one would describe it, beyond words, before words. I think that that is the source of his tremendous energy. I think that's the source of his great strength, is this communion with the Lord. And I hope that was clear in Witness to Hope.
Nancy, thanks for the call. Jim from St. Louis in your car. Hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have I love John Paul. I think he obviously has been one of the fantastic popes in history. I have a good friend of mine who's a sort of a traditionalist Catholic, not schismatic. He goes to the Indult Latin Mass, but he always talks about how John Paul's pontificate has been somewhat of a disappointment, like he's a moral relativist. And I just want to know what you would say to your traditionalist Catholic on why his pontificate was good. And then on a related note, if you could sort of explain the incidences with his kissing the Quran. He seems to make a big deal about that, and there was some sort of World Peace Mass at Assisi, and I'll hang up and listen to your thanks.
Okay, moral relativist.
Friend is a little confused.
I was going to say, but let me just...
No one who reads Veritas of Splendor could possibly imagine John Paul II is a moral relativist.
I agree.
I have no idea what this incident of, quote, kissing the Quran is about. It comes up time and time again. I'm unaware of this. If the Pope did it, he was expressing respect for the sacred text of a great world religion, and I think people should take it as nothing more than that. There was not a mass at Assisi in 1986. The Pope invited religious leaders from all over the world to come to Assisi, not to pray together, but to be together to pray, each in his own way for peace. If people are nostalgic for a 19th century style of papacy and of Catholicism, yes, they will find this pontificate disappointing. But that's not what the Holy Spirit is calling the Church into. Mm.
I think it's clear from the teaching of the Church, in this, the document recently released, Dominus Iesus, that while we respect other world religions, we don't regard their texts as inspired scripture in the manner that we regard the Old and New Testament.
Well, of course not.
No,
we can't.
I mean
how could we do that? It's like saying we would regard the Book of Mormon as a secondary revelation. It is also true, Al, and we should remind your listeners, that Dominus Iesus simply reiterates the teaching of the Second Vatican Council.
Of
the 1990 encyclical Redemptoris Missio.
I agree. I often tell people I first read the document, I said, "Oh, this is, you know, in many ways unremarkable. There's nothing new here."
Oh, it's exactly right.
There was this firestorm of controversy. Our number is 1-888-31-TRUTH. Talking about the life of Pope John Paul II. This, of course, in recognition of his birthday tomorrow. My guest is George Weigel, the author of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II. Let's go to Mike in Illinois. Good to have you, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? Good afternoon. I was going to ask you a couple questions. Do you think there's any possibility that the Pope has any influence or is setting up who he thinks the next Pope will be? And also, do you think there's a possibility that he would be forced to retire because of his health?
To the first, I think the question simply would never occur to him. He is too much a believer in the truth that the Holy Spirit is the protagonist of a conclave to attempt to wire something in advance. And he is too much a respecter of his brethren in the College of Cardinals, on whom that responsibility of choice will fall one day. So no, I don't think this is in his mind at all. And possibility of a resignation or retirement. Being the Pope is not like being the CEO of General Motors. It's far more like being the father of a family.
Okay.
And you don't resign paternity.
Okay. Mike, thanks for the call.
Yep.
And let's go to another Mike in Illinois. Good to have you, Mike.
Yes, George and Al. My question is, upon reading your book, it has to do with the mystical side. Again, the question was asked. First of all, I had heard a report or a rumor that went before the Pope John Paul became Pope, that in his earlier days he had some kind of a discussion with Padre Pio or something, that he had told him that he was going to be Pope. I don't know. I didn't see any reference to that in your book, I don't believe.
Well,
true. And then another one was, when I was at the Vatican, I was told that I was visiting with somebody there, that when the Pope had was shot, that he had St. Peter's relics brought up to his room, which I think is very significant. But,
discuss this much remarked Padre Pio business in the book, send an end note. That Father Carlo Wojtyla went to confession to Padre Pio is something he's discussed. This is 1946, 47, 48, somewhere in that period. I asked the Holy Father what that was like. He simply said Padre Pio was a very simple and direct confessor. He didn't volunteer any more information. This is within a confessional context. It did not seem appropriate to me to pursue it any further. I think the business about the relics simply has to do with the fact that the Holy Father was in the hospital on June 29th, the solemnity of Peter and Paul, of 1981 because of the assassination attempt. And since he could not be in St. Peter's Basilica as the successor of Peter to celebrate the Mass on that day, he had the relics brought to him so he could celebrate Mass in his hotel room with that. So I think it was just keeping alive the tradition of Peter's successor celebrating the Holy Eucharist over the relics of St. Peter on that special feast day.
Our number again is 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-31-TRUTH. Talking with George Weigel about Pope John Paul II, his birthday tomorrow. And you're welcome to call in with your questions and clear up misconceptions that you may have or friends may have regarding this pontificate. The number once again is 1-888-31-TRUTH. Well, let's talk about his attitude towards women, since among certain well-placed feminist theologians in America, he's considered retrograde, perhaps even a misogynist.
Well, this is obviously a misimpression. The Pope's apostolic letter on the dignity and vocation of women is a real lifting up of the distinctive vocation of women in the world. The Pope's appointment of Marianne Glendon as head of the Vatican delegation to the Beijing Women's Conference in 1995 and his personal instruction to her that they were to stand up for the voiceless women of the world, I think tells you all you need to know on that front. The Pope is a sign of contradiction, as the Church is a sign of contradiction in some feminist circles, because the Church believes that while men and women are absolutely equal in their fundamental human dignity, that they're not interchangeable, that maleness and femaleness are not accidents of evolutionary biology. They're not cultural constructs. They're icons. They're icons that reveal deep truths about the world, about us, and ultimately about God. So the notion that maleness and femaleness are, you know, mere matters of biology is not an idea that fits at all within the Catholic sacramental imagination about the world, in which everything in this world is pointing to a truth beyond this world, or a truth that bounds this world. So sure, there's going to be signs of contradiction there. But I think, I mean, my impression is that what we call, in its most radical form, gender feminism today, is very much a generational phenomenon, is not being widely replicated among a younger generation of women today. So I think there may be a more open audience for the Church's teaching on the dignity and vocation of women in the years ahead.
Which either the Holy Father has called, or at least Marianne Glendon has called, a new feminism.
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Well, I've heard it. I'm trying to remember. I was talking to Marianne Glendon about this months ago, and she mentioned that this is actually what the writings of John Paul II and his understanding of women constitutes really a new feminism.
I think that's right. I mean, I think it's a feminism of discipleship. Pope told the Roman Curia in December 1987 that everything in the Church, including the office of Peter, happens within the theological horizon of Mary's discipleship. The church is fundamentally formed in its essential characteristic, namely a community of disciples, in the image of a woman, in the image of the woman who was the mother of God. This takes us so far beyond Cosmopolitan magazine feminism or Narrow feminism or Eleanor Schmiel feminism as to be virtually on another planet. And I mean, when I go on campuses, for example, these days and discuss the Pope's theology of the body, I get a very positive and interested reception from young women. And I'm not talking about Catholic campuses only. I'm talking about Smith College, a hotbed of academic feminism for many decades. So I think we're moving into a very new period in this discussion, and it will be a much more fruitful discussion because of the teaching of this pontificate.
Our number once again is 1-888-31-TRUTH. Let's go to Art in Oakland, California right now. Hello, Art.
How are you folks doing?
Doing well.
I really appreciate the opportunity to ask somebody who knows the Holy Father well, because there are some things that, though traditionalists truly do love the Holy Father, perplex us. We see things like the Holy Father kissing the Quran, putting a Buddha image on the altar, allowing scandalous sorts of things happening within the liturgy in the United States, illicit activities at Mass that are forbidden by the Roman Missal. We see Cardinal Ratzinger releasing something that's purported to be the third secret of Fatima. We see huge apostasy in the church.
What do you mean?
And we go, oh my God, what's going on in the church? Yeah. And what is? How do you explain
right.
that to about the Holy Father?
Sure, hold it. Okay, go ahead, George.
What do you mean purported to be the third secret of Fatima? You suggest
well,
that
I do. There has been a lot of scholarship that's looked at it over the years, and there are things that are inconsistent about the so-called released third secret that are inconsistent with things that Sister Lucia herself has said. The bishop who first looked at the secret within, you know, that Sister Lucia had written to the Holy Father was on a single page without margins. It's out of scale.
Let me make clear what you just said. You just implied that there's a deliberate manipulation and even substitution of a previous text.
It appears so.
I want to make it clear that you're making that kind of charge.
You're right. George,
go ahead.
Well, I think this is very unfortunate. There has what our caller is referring to as scholarship is in fact nothing but speculation. These texts were not released before. One of the reasons they were not released before is this, if you will pardon the phrase, obsession with the apocalyptic dimensions of the Fatima revelations that seems to have gotten a small number of Catholics by the throat for many decades now. And I think it's exactly this kind of conspiratorially minded reaction that suggests it was wise not to have this public before this. Private revelations have a distinctive place in the life of the church, but they are not previews of coming attractions or coming distractions. They are not, as Cardinal Ratzinger says in his, I think, quite elegant theological commentary on the third Fatima message, they are not a kind of cinematic preview of the future. And I don't understand why people who obviously want to be and understand themselves to be faithful Catholics are behaving with the Fatima texts somewhat like fundamentalist Protestants behave with the Book of Revelation. I mean, this all sounds very much like, the Left Behind series, Catholic style. I don't understand this. Perhaps you could explain to me why these are matters of such urgent concern.
Well, we are going to move on, though, George.
Art's not with us,
and in fact, we're out of time on this segment, and I want to make sure we have a clean break and then come back and take some more calls. But it is a good question. Our number is 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-31-TRUTH. We'll take more of your calls on today's broadcast in a moment. But before we do, Jerry Usher has a special radio offer to make.
Hi, friends. Jerry Usher here. You know, it's a blessing to have Alcresta hosting the program while I'm away, and a genuine honor to feature George Weigel as our guest today. When my plans were being made to be gone this week, I was especially disappointed that I would miss hosting this particular program. The reason is because of my deep love for Pope John Paul II, a love I'm sure many of you share. Make no mistake, we're living in truly historic times under the leadership of one of the greatest popes in the history of the Church. John Paul has had a hand in so many monumental events, it's impossible to begin to list them all. From the fall of communism to the collapse of dictatorships to the epic papal visit to Cuba, our Holy Father has been front and center on the world stage, helping to address every major question facing mankind at the dawn of the new millennium. Well, it's almost certain that you and I will never come face to face with this great man. Now you can meet him personally through the pen of our radio guest, George Weigel, author of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II, the amazing story of John Paul's fascinating life, which the Pope himself asked George Weigel to write. Call our customer service department at 888-291-8000 to order your very own copy of Witness to Hope. George Weigel was given unprecedented access to Pope John Paul and the people who have known and worked with him throughout his entire life. And you'll come to know and love him more as you make your way through the nearly 1,000 pages of detailed information about his life and ministry, complete with dozens of photographs. And when you order Witness to Hope, we'll rush you a free copy of our Papacy Workbook, 80 pages filled with information about the history of the papacy, the Pope as shepherd, the Pope as teacher, how popes are selected, and much more, all supported with tons of references to Scripture, the Catechism, and the Church Fathers. And when it comes to discussing the life of a man like Pope John Paul II, a one-hour radio program like this can barely skim the surface, but now you can have access to everything you'd ever want to know about this saintly shepherd of Christ's flock. Order a copy of Witness to Hope for your own library and for anyone you know who would benefit from reading George Weigel's terrific biography of our Holy Father. Personally, I wish he could be our Pope forever, but we know that's not going to happen, so all the more reason to own a copy of Witness to Hope by George Weigel. This way, you can better appreciate John Paul for as long as God allows him to be with us and treasure his memory when God calls him home. Francis Cardinal George of Chicago has called Witness to Hope the definitive work when it comes to biographies of Pope John Paul. Every home should have a copy of this great book. Get yours today by calling 888-291-8000. Don't forget, we'll also send you a free copy of our 80-page Papacy Workbook. Dial 888-291-8000 now.
Call now to speak with today's guest toll-free at 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 1-888-318-7884. And now, more Catholic Answers Live.
Good day. I'm Al Cresta, sitting in for Jerry Usher. And I want to mention we are with George Weigel. He is the author of Witness to Hope, taking your calls on Pope John Paul II. You know, biographical details, what his legacy will be, some of the key moments in his current life. Here's the number again, 1-888-31-TRUTH. Let's go to David in Rochester Hills, Michigan. Hello, David. You're up, David.
I had a question regarding Pope John Paul II's probably been at least, you know, he's the main pope in my lifetime, but he seems like he's one of the most prolific popes as far as his writings and encyclicals and homilies. And I know part of that's due to the communication age that we're in. But my question, I guess, is in his current physical condition, how is he, I mean, I could never write that stuff, and I'm only 35 years old. and I know his mind is still sharp, but just physically, or how does he go about getting these things written? And I guess that's my question.
Okay. George?
I think the short clips that we have seen on television of the Holy Father for the last several years really do give a distorted view of his physical circumstances. This is not a man in tremendous physical difficulties. I mean, he moves a little more slowly, but he is clearly, as we saw again last week in Greece and Syria and Malta, he is clearly able, if at a somewhat slower pace, to do what he needs to do. I think the Pope is invigorated intellectually and spiritually by the development of his magisterium. I think the long and complicated process of reflection and consultation that produces a great encyclical like Veritatis Splendor, for example, is for him not a burden, but in fact a pleasure. It's the kind of intellectual work that I think he finds very engaging personally. Novo Millennio in Aeunte, the apostolic letter concluding the Great Jubilee of 2000, which was issued in January, is a good example of, I think, the pleasure the Pope takes in this process. It's very much a document that reflects his style, his mind, his mode of expression. My guess is he had a great time writing that. I think you sense his enjoyment of that kind of work in the lyrical quality of the document itself.
Let me put it this way. Some people say he's a great teacher, and he's a great leader, and he's got a flair for the dramatic. He's a man who knows the importance of a symbolic gesture. But he's no administrator. And, he's not moving things along administratively. What do you make of that?
I think that said a lot, and I think it. I think it's not the case. The mark of a good manager, as any of these endless books on being a good manager you find in bookstores will tell you, is someone who sets priorities and follows them, and then accomplishes what he sets out to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly the management style, so to speak, of John Paul II. He is not a micromanager. He does not stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning like one of his predecessors reading the files that come in from every cabinet department in the Roman Curia.
Mm-hmm.
He is a respecter of the work of others. He understands that the institutional culture of the Holy See cannot be changed overnight, that this is a process of evolution. I think, in fact, if one looks at the way things function today versus the way things functioned 25 or 30 years ago, they, in fact, function much better today.
Hmm.
And that this has happened in the midst of a intense internationalization of the Roman Curia is a quite remarkable accomplishment. Is the structure of that bureaucracy something that could be reexamined? Perhaps. It will be 35 years next year since the Roman Curia in its present form was restructured. And perhaps in the next pontificate, 5-10 years from now, it will be time to look at that and see if that's the kind of structure that most effectively serves an evangelically assertive church. But that's for later. I think the Pope, at the beginning of this pontificate, made the quite appropriate strategic judgment, if I may call it that, that the thing he did best was be a witness.
Mm-hmm.
And he has done that magnificently. And that does not mean he has not paid attention to management issues, but it means that he has a set of priorities.
Yes.
Yes. And micromanaging is not high on that list.
Mm-hmm. And let's continue. The lines are full right now, but as soon as someone drops off, you can get through at 1-888-31-TRUTH. I have many questions that I would like to continue asking, but I really owe it to my callers. And let's go to Margaret in New Jersey. Hello, Margaret.
Hello. I just wanted to comment how happy and pleased I was that the Pope actually wrote a letter for such a distinct group as artists, because I am one, and I never expected to be the recipient of papal attention for that. And I was also very pleased to see him on television on EWTN in Cuba, and to see him with the youth at World Youth Day. I was just remarkably energized by seeing how he managed to pull off some really incredible things. And I hope he lives to be 182. But I have a question. I want to know.
I'm not sure he wants to live to be 182.
I know. I'm sure some days he might not. But I want to know, Therese of Lisieux was unexpectedly canonized. Padre Pio's cause and John the 24th went forth rather quickly. Do you see a cause in his future?
Oh, I rather expect that that one will be introduced after he is called home. I expect that would begin in Krakow, actually. Paul the Sixth began up in Brescia, in his home area. I think that's probably likely.
Our number again is 1-888-31-TRUTH. Margaret, thank you so much. Let's go to Francis in St. Louis. Hello, Francis.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Professor Weigel, would you give me your impression or your opinion about the statements that might be made 5 years, say, after John Paul passes, that on his effect on the Catholic Church, as seen and stated by two people? One is the head of the Lutheran Church that signed the Joint Declaration on Justification a year or two ago, and the second by who I believe is the Patriarch of Orthodox Patriarch of Constantinople. If you could comment on those, please.
Well, I'm not quite sure what statements about the Pope are those religious leaders you're referring to.
What will they say in 5 years? I think he's asking you to speculate. How will they regard him in 5 years? His influence.
Well, yes. Thank you for clarifying that. I think we are at a kind of plateau moment in the Lutheran Catholic dialogue right now. There were great hopes invested in the process leading up to the Joint Declaration on Justification by Faith. We have now said that while there are theological nuances of understanding, that both Lutherans and Catholics, the Lutheran World Federation and the Catholic Church, understand the central truths involved in justification by faith in ways that are so close as to be, if not identical, then at least not church-dividing, and yet the churches remain divided. This was the triggering issue. Theologically, the Lutheran Reformation, it has been resolved, and yet the churches are still divided. Why is that the case? It's the case because, to adopt a metaphor from sports, the goalposts have moved over the past 450 years, mm-hmm. and new issues mm-hmm. have emerged. I think, for example, that the next large set of questions in the dialogue, not only with the Lutheran World Federation and the ecclesial communities it represents, but with the Anglican Communion, has to be on the question of sacramentality. What does it mean to be a church that lives from the sacraments in a sacramentally configured world? This is something that has not been sufficiently addressed in these dialogues. I think it's at the root of the continuing divide between Rome and the churches of the Reformation on issues of ministry, Eucharist, etc. And we've got to get going on that. I think it's a different situation with Orthodoxy. There are some theological issues to be still sorted out with the Orthodox churches, but in the Pope's judgment at least, they are not of the gravity and fundamental character of the theological issues that remain outstanding with the Reformation communities. I think the problem with the Orthodox conversation right now, the Catholic Orthodox conversation, is primarily psychological and historical. We have to understand that the Orthodox churches, by and large, had an extraordinarily difficult 20th century. They were deeply wounded by that experience, particularly in Russia, which is the largest Orthodox church in the world. And they are simply not in condition, spiritually, psychologically, intellectually, to take up at this moment the kind of invitation that the Pope issued in the 1995 encyclical Ut Unum Sent. What I think we can hope is that in the wake of the Pope's very positive reception in Romania in 1999, this transformative experience in Greece last week, and what I will predict now will be a similarly successful pilgrimage to Ukraine in June, that the psychological obstacles are beginning to be dealt with. And we may see in 2002. We should hope that we see. We should pray that we see in 2002 John Paul II in Moscow. This may all be building up to that. And that would be something quite extraordinary and terribly important, both for the ecumenical future and for the future of Russia. Russia has no future if it closes in on itself. It's a society in terrible demographic, social distress right now. The path beyond that comes from much closer linkages with free societies. So there's just an enormous amount at stake, both ecumenically and in terms of the world politics of the 21st century in all of this. Sorry for a long and rambling answer.
No,
they're very good questions.
It's fascinating. And, George, I want to thank you once again for being with us. Your work is much esteemed by this audience, and I've benefited and profited greatly, not only from this wonderful book, Witness to Hope, but from so much of your other work. And thanks so much for joining us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Well, thank you very much, Al. It's always good to be with you, and I want to remind the readers again that the new paperback edition of the book is out with a new afterword on the Jubilee year.
Very good.
Terrific.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
And let me remind you of today's Catholic Answers Live radio offer. We've got George Weigel's book, Witness to Hope, available, along with Catholic Answers' Papacy Workbook, 80 pages there. And I want to let you know you can order those at 1-888-291-8000. That's 1-888-291-8000. And that will give you a chance to get into this marvelous biography, as well as get that 80-page papacy workbook. I'm Al Cresta. I've been sitting in this week for Jerry Usher. Tomorrow, Catholic Answers Senior Apologist James Aiken and Johnny Hocraft right here on Catholic Answers Live.
You've been listening to Catholic Answers Live, a radio presentation of Catholic Answers based in San Diego, California. For more information on the outstanding apologetics and evangelization materials available from Catholic Answers, write to us at P.O. Box 199-000, San Diego, California, 92159. Or call us toll-free at 1-888-291-8000. You'll find us on the World Wide Web at www.catholic.com. Catholic Answers Live takes your phone calls Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. Join us again next time for more engaging Catholic talk radio on Catholic Answers Live.